From Matthew 21 through the end of Matthew, we are going to be studying essentially the last week of Christ. Already the triumphal entry has taken place. Palm Sunday has already happened in this particular section. And so we are now getting essentially a showdown. There's going to be a fight that's brewing. This fight has been brewing for a while. Jesus has been walking around doing teaching, doing miracles. He has been essentially bucking the establishment, the religious establishment that was there. And they do not like what Jesus stands for. They do not like that their traditions are being overturned. They don't like that their power is being threatened. And up until now, Jesus has been very careful to tell people, don't say anything. Don't tell anyone who I am. Don't advertise what I've been doing. Keep it a secret, because everything had to happen at the right time. And now is the time that the conflict starts to go really strongly. And it really builds because Jesus is about to tell a parable that is going to anger people. As I read through the parable, I realized it's a little hard for us to understand because we don't have the same context. We don't have the same culture. So I thought I would see if I could contemporize the story a little bit, and then we'll go back and read the original story and see how it goes. So imagine there's this guy, and he decides to open up a thrift store. It seems easy enough. So he files for a business license. He establishes an LLC. He goes and he finds a place to rent in a little shopping center. And he does all the work that's needed. He tears down the interior. He builds it back up. He decorates it. He goes and gets people to come and bring their stuff to donate. And so he's building up this thrift store, trying to make a living for himself. The time finally comes for him to open this thrift store up, but he is called out of the country. But that's okay, because he has some people that he's hired to run the store for him. So it's rather simple. He has gone, and now other people are running his store, managing it, taking in the donations, making the sales. Their grand opening is going, and it's going really, really well. Well, the time comes for him to collect the money that has been gathered so that he can enjoy a little bit of the wealth that he has developed, some of the fruits of his labor. So he sends a couple of people, his close friends, he calls them up and says, hey, can you go down to my thrift store? We need to collect the money that has been gathered. We need to deposit it into the bank. We need to make our tax payments. We got to have a lot of stuff that needs to go on. So can you please go and do this? So these people, these friends of his, show up. And when they show up, the general manager who was hired to run his store sees the people coming and says, Oh, he's coming for the money. And so what he does is, when he shows up, he kills him. Whoa, that got a little violent a little fast. But this guy is essentially trying to take over the store. So he kills his friend, and word gets back to the other guy that his friend was killed when he came to collect the money. So the owner decides, I'm going to send another group of friends. This time, but I won't send one. I'm going to send a couple guys, because that way they'll be more protected, and there's going to be more witnesses, and we'll get this taken care of. So he sends them, and this time there's a mob waiting for them, and they beat them all down, killing a couple of them, but essentially sending them to the hospital and a couple to the morgue. So the owner says, I'm going to send now my son. My son, who I'm doing this for him. I'm trying to help him out. It's going to be his business anyway. I'm just going to be a father. So they're going to respect my son when he shows up. The general managers are outside the shop when all of a sudden they look and they see the son parking his car and coming in, and they talk to themselves and they say, it's the kid. You know what we're going to do? We're going to kill him. And once we kill him, at that point, I think we will have established that we own this shop. So the son walks in the door. They ambush him. They bash him over the head. They kick him. They stomp on him. They stab him. And he dies. What would you do if you were the owner? That's not a rhetorical question. I'm really curious. What would you do if you were the owner? What was that, Dave? You would blow the place up, but that would also be your store and your shop and everything. You already lost everything. You lost your kid. Yeah. Yeah, that's a terrible feeling to think about losing your kid. Would anyone here have called the police? Yeah, like the first time, like this, you hear this. This is the reason why one of the problems when you read the story is it doesn't make a lot of sense because we don't really know how things work. But we would have said at the very first time, the very first moment that they mistreated my financial accountant that had shown up to collect the money, I would have called the cops. I would have shown up. I would have thrown them in jail. I would have ousted them. If I had the ability to, I would have killed them back myself. That's how angry I would be. But I would get even angrier if you touch my kid. There's one thing when you mess with my friends. Another thing, if you mess with me, you go after my kid, there's going to be hell to pay. This is the story that Jesus tells. And what he's trying to do as he tells this story is he's trying to get the religious leaders to essentially self-indict themselves. He's trying to get them to make a declaration that is so obvious to everyone listening, but it will essentially be incriminating evidence against them. Here's this original story. I agree. What do you have as a heading? Mine says the parable of the tenants. Does anyone have anything else? The evil what? The story of the evil farmers. That could also be one. I've heard the story of the wicked tenants. How about this? The story of the incredible patience of a landowner who's dealing with rotten land managers. Wouldn't that be a great, that'd be a better title, I think. Because again, as you read through this, it's easy to come to the conclusion we're going to come to, but don't forget that one of the things that's happening is that there is a lot of mercy and grace that's being given by the owner of this vineyard. Here's the story. Listen to another parable. There was a landowner who planted a vineyard. He put a wall around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a watchtower. So this guy has done a lot of work. This is not something that he inherited from his rich folks. This isn't something that he just stumbled across and bought at auction. He has put his blood, sweat, and tears. This vineyard that he has developed, he has worked hard at. After he has done all of these things for this vineyard, to protect it, to put a watchtower, then he rented the vineyard to some farmers and went away on a journey. That's often how things would happen in those days, much like how things happen now. Owners of things will hire people to run the business for them. And they're hoping and trusting that as they run it, they're going to receive, as the owner, the money from the work that they'd put in. The people who are managing it will also get paid themselves, but most importantly, they're going to honor whoever the owner is. So he goes out on a journey. And when the harvest time approached, he sent his servants to the tenants to collect his fruit. So now the time has come. Now we're going to collect some fruit. We're going to collect some of the grapes. We're going to develop into wine. We're going to sell it. We're going to sell it to other people. But we've got to essentially collect all this stuff and get this going. The tenants seized his servants. They beat one, killed another, and stoned a third. Now right there, you as a landowner, what would you do? Call the police. That's always safe. You know, call the police. Call 911. They need... The fact that his servants were mistreated right from the get-go as a landowner, that should have angered him. But this is where we see this incredible patience from this owner. Instead of coming in with the cops, instead of coming in with the SWAT team and ousting these tenants, the landowner gives another chance, gives another opportunity for maybe the managers of this vineyard, the workers in this vineyard, to maybe come clean and maybe change their minds. So verse 36, then he sent other servants to them more than the first time. So again, it wasn't like this same amount came. This is a whole new group and there's a lot more of them. And you could hear the concept of these managers of this vineyard. They're digging deep. They're holding in for a fight. They're ready to fight tooth and nail. And they're not going to back down even if more people show up. And the tenants treated them the same way. Kills them, beats them, stones them, and we're still in the exact same position we've been in before. Last of all, he sent his son to them. They will respect my son. But when the tenants saw the son, they said to each other, "This is the heir. Come, let's kill him and take his inheritance." So they took him and threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes back, what will he do to these tenants? The story is set. The people hearing this hopefully have some sort of righteous outrage. How dare they kill and mistreat the owner's son? How dare they violate this person's trust? How dare they try taking over the very vineyard they did not plant, they did not work, they did not help establish, and they are trying to take over everything about this owner, including killing his own son. Verse 41, he will bring those wretches to a wretched end, they replied, and he will rent the vineyard to other tenants who will give him his share of the crop at harvest time. So they got it right. Yeah? Would that seem like an appropriate set of actions? You aren't going to take care of the vineyard properly. You are not going to give me the fruit that I am asking for. So I am going to take you out and I'm going to put people in who will give me what I have given to them. And Jesus then says to them, have you never read in the scriptures? The stone the builders rejected has become the capstone. The Lord has done this and it is marvelous in our eyes. The capstone could either be the cornerstone, which is the stone that every other stone is built upon, which causes the house or the structure to be even, or it is the final stone. The stone that will keep everything into place and lock it into place. When you look at the context, almost always it's in reference to this cornerstone. As they would do these buildings, they would find these incredible, large, massive stones, and they would cut them and they would chisel them, and they would try to make it as perfectly square as possible. Because ultimately, if the stone is off, the house is built wrong. It will be shaky, it will be wobbly, it will not be able to sustain itself. And Jesus says, this capstone, this cornerstone that I have given, you've rejected it. You've rejected my son. You've rejected him who you could build your life on and everything will then be square. Everything will then fall into place properly, but you've rejected it. And it's become the cornerstone. And then he gives this scathing indictment. Verse 43, therefore I tell you that the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people who will produce its fruit. Now you got to imagine if you're a religious leader listening at that time, this would be really, really terrible to hear. It would be really, really angering. It would be really, really upsetting. And this is the problem that we have as people of God when we hear the discipline that God gives us. Who here enjoys to be corrected by God? I don't like it personally. In fact, usually when I sin, when I do something bad, you know what I'm really good at? I'm really good at shifting the blame to someone else. We're good at this, right? My father-in-law tells a story. It's a great little story of as he's driving down the road one time, he's coming up on this accident and he's looking in his rearview mirror and the person behind him is flying at full speed. And he's thinking to himself, this is going to turn out poorly because he's going to hit me and he's going to hit this and I'm going to be caught up in this whole massive accident. And so he says, I'm out of here. Pulls his car, whips it to the side. The person behind hits that car going full speed. Guess who gets sued? Well, it's obviously my father-in-law's fault. If he wouldn't have pulled out, then that accident wouldn't have happened at full speed like that. So it's obviously his fault. Make sense? No, it does not. This is the craziest. Who's at fault? How about the idiot driver that's been going 70 miles an hour and wasn't even paying attention? But that's what we do. If something happens, you send your child to the grocery store to buy milk. Joshua feels like, is he talking about me? I feel called out. I'm just making up a story. This one is actually made up. So I send my son to the grocery store. And as he's going to the grocery store, he gets into an accident. He wasn't paying attention. And as he was parking the car, he just bashes right in to a Porsche 911. Whose fault is it? It's my fault. Why? I sent him to the scene. See how good we are at this? It's so natural. We're like, well, of course it's my. If I wouldn't have sent him to the store, the accident wouldn't have happened and my insurance rates wouldn't go up. Or now we can blame, let's blame the Porsche owner, because who would drive a Porsche to the grocery store? What is wrong with these people? Come on. This is terrible.
He parked it in the wrong spot.
And I bet if we do some studying, we can find out that the parking spots are too small. And they're probably not to code, so who can we sue? Let's sue the city too. I love this. We are so good at this. You hear something from God, and he tells you in his word how to live. But you decide to go and do your own thing. You know that it is inappropriate to gossip. You know it. But you can't help it because you like it so much. So you're hanging out with all of your good Christian friends. It comes time for the prayer time. And you say, can we please pray for Jody? I'm not going to gossip. But Jody has been mismanaging her money lately. Way to go, Jody. And can you all please pray for me? And then it happens that Craig decides to go and talk to Jody. We are praying for, why are you praying for me? Well, I was told by Pastor Manning that you're having financial issues. So Jody comes back. Of course, who is she angry at? She's angry at me. And she says, you're not supposed to be gossiping. You're not supposed to be telling people my problems. You as a pastor are supposed to be keeping everything in confidence. And I feel this conviction. I feel like I have done something wrong. I have violated her. I've violated her trust. But I'm good at this game. Who do I blame? Well, let's see. First of all, let's blame Jody, because if you wouldn't have been in financial problems in the first place, and you told me You should never have told me. And I can also blame Craig. Craig, that was in our prayer circle. Like, why did you go? And so I get angry. But who should I be angry at? Myself. I'm the one that did something wrong. Your wife runs up a massive amount of money on the credit card. I'm not speaking from my wife's good on that. See, this is how rumors start. This is why it's dangerous. But, you know, there might be a wife here that runs up a credit card, and all of a sudden, it's discovered and this overspending. And the wife says, but no, all that stuff on the credit card I bought for you, honey. Really? What did you buy on? Well, I bought some new clothes. How was that for me? Well, I bought them so I look pretty so that I can do this for you. Okay, what else did you buy? Well, I also bought a dog. But I didn't want a dog. Well, no, I got that for me. But that'll bring me joy, and so that will bring you joy. A big fight ensues. Whose fault is it? It's always my fault. It's always just, George, you're a good man, I tell you. You're a good man. It's the credit card company's fault. Because why would they raise the limit of my wife's card to be, you know what, I'm going to sue them. And they tempted us with points. I was getting airline miles, and I'm looking forward to my trip to Hawaii with this. We're really good at blaming everyone else. And here, what God is saying to these religious leaders is, look, I have come to you over and over and over, and I'm telling you that what you're doing is wrong. Adam and Eve were the first ones to start it. Eve eats the apple. So as we know, it's all her fault. Of course, Adam was standing right there, so he's at fault. So God shows up to Adam, and what does Adam say? Her fault. Eve's like, you just threw me under the bus. How dare you? No love for you tonight. And so then God says to Eve, what's this, and what does Eve do? Snake. And of course, in there is also this really hidden, veiled thing that Adam also does. This woman that you gave to me, because ultimately, right, it's God's fault. And we're good at this. We're good at not taking the blame for anything. We are good at shifting the problems that we have, the sins that we commit, and trying to find someone, anyone, who will take the fall on our behalf. And God's saying, it's time to stop that game. I keep coming to you over and over and over again. You know that the things that you are doing, you know that there are things that you are doing that are not right. Why are you living this way? And we blame a lot of things. We blame our parents because they didn't raise us right. We blame our genes because we're Italian or we're a redhead. We blame our society because it's so materialistic. We blame the stupid Republicans. We blame the dumb Democrats. We blame Congress. We blame police officers. We blame everyone except ourselves. And this is where I think the final thing that Jesus says is this very powerful thing that we often miss. Because it doesn't sound very good, but it actually is good news. He's referring back to the stone. He says, he who falls on this stone will be broken to pieces, but he on whom it falls will be crushed. So you really essentially have two choices, right? The two choices you have are to fall on the stone, to place yourself at the mercy of the stone. But the problem is when you do that, it's going to hurt a little bit. Because guess who's at fault? You. Guess who's getting hurt? You. Guess who might be struggling with some things in your life? You. But the thing is, you're going to be scraped up, you're going to be bruised, you're going to be battered a little bit, but you will not die. But if you galvanize yourself in your sin, you stubbornly refuse to hear what God is saying. You say, I don't want to follow after God. I don't care what he says. I don't care what Jesus says because it just doesn't apply to me. I don't care that there is a whole Old Testament that is there for my understanding. I've rejected all. I don't care about all the stuff that Paul says. In fact, I don't even believe half of the stuff that Jesus said, Jesus actually said. I will live my own life. Thank you very much. This is my life. I will live it the way I want to live it. At that point, what you have essentially asked for is not for forgiveness, not for mercy, not for help from this stone that can straighten out your life. But what's going to end up happening is you will fall under the weight of that stone and you'll be crushed. Those are the two responses to discipline. And they're very hard to deal with. You have to first come to the conclusion that maybe some of the things that you're doing are not quite right. Maybe you are mishandling your money. Maybe you're lying to your spouse. Maybe you're cheating on your taxes. Maybe you're not being honest in the grocery store when the person gives you change. Maybe you've lied to your friends. Maybe you've lied to your parents. Maybe you've hidden things from other people. Maybe you've said things about other people that are untrue, all so that you could save yourself. And God says, what are you going to do with this? And you can stand there and you can say, I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to do whatever I want. It's not my fault anyway. It's obviously everyone else's fault. Or you can say, God, forgive me. I have messed up. After I have that initial anger and that initial response of wanting to be out underneath the discipline of God, I see that I am at fault. And it is a painful place to be. And it hurts. Because I don't know about you, I hate admitting that I'm wrong. And I have a feeling you're a lot like me. And when you finally say, Lord, forgive me, you end up falling on top of the stone saying, please forgive me. Which one of these two people is God going to have managing his affairs? And that's why he says, these people, this kingdom will be taken away from you and given to others. And this, of course, then starts this fight. The chief priests and the Pharisees, they heard Jesus' parable. They knew he was talking about them. And that's a little bit embarrassing, don't you think? I think we should kill them. Kill them all. Well, actually, I'm talking about you. You've mishandled my vineyard. You've been doing everything wrong. And ultimately, you're going to kill Jesus Christ. You're going to kill me. You're going to kill God's Son. Oh, and instead of right then and there repenting, instead of right there going, what have we done? We have completely and utterly messed things up. The Pharisees say, you know what we're going to do? Let's kill him. Let's kill him. There was another person who had a very similar thing happen to him. His name was King David. King David, as you know, was doing things that he wasn't supposed to be doing. In the words of VeggieTales, he was playing with another man's rubber ducky. That's King George and the Ducky. You can rent it. It's great VeggieTales stuff. What was that? We do need to rewatch that. Yeah, just Google it. I tell you, well, I've got the video. Because there's a guy, and he's got all these duckies to play with in his bathtub. And he's got all these rubber duckies that he can choose from. But then there's this neighbor of his, and this neighbor of his is poor, and he doesn't have a lot. And this neighbor of his is also one of his good friends. And he sees his neighbor's rubber ducky, and he goes, I want that rubber ducky. That's going to be my rubber ducky. So he sends his neighbor off into the Great Pie War. And his neighbor gets creamed. It's good stuff, I tell you. It's a great parable. And David thinks that he's gotten away with stealing his neighbor's rubber ducky. Until one day the prophet shows up and he says, I've got a story for you, king. Great, I love stories. This is great. So he grabs some popcorn, he grabs a soda, and he says, tell me the story. And he says, well, there was this guy, and he had all this money, and his friend came in from out of town, and he came to visit his friend. And his friend didn't want to take any of his own animals, especially his lambs. He didn't want to take any of them and kill it in order to eat and share with his friend. So what he does is he goes and he finds someone who has only one lamb. And he takes it, and he kills it and eats it. King, what should happen to that guy? And David says, he should pay for that. He should die for that. He's got to pay back sevenfold what happened. This was horrible what he did. And then Nathan says these incredible words. You are that man. And you know what David did? He repented. Because that's the two options. You either realize you are the mess up. You are the violator. You are the gossiper. You are the hater. You are the killer. And we say, dear God, please forgive me because I have messed up again. And if you do that, grace and forgiveness is yours. And you will produce fruit that is pleasing to God, that comes from a heart that is not rebellious, a heart that does not dig in and say it's everyone else's fault but my own. And God says, you are now the one to run my vineyard. I pray that today, as we continue on in this brand new year, that we would start with hearts that are soft and that can hear some really terrible things and know that God will not crush you. God will not destroy you. You'll get scraped up. You'll get bruised. It hurts. Your ego will be damaged. Things might have consequences here on this earth, but your soul is saved because you trust in the amazing grace that God gives. Let's pray. Father, forgive me because I am so good at rejecting your discipline. I am so good at blaming everyone else. I'm so good at blaming my wife. I'm good at blaming my kids. I'm really good at blaming the culture around us. I'm really good at blaming politicians. But I'm not really good at doing it to myself. And I realize, Lord, there's things that you need to work on me, that I need to work on. And I can just simply say, ain't my fault. Or I can say, Lord, please be merciful to me. And I pray that I would throw myself in the mercy of Jesus Christ, who did not come to kill me, but who came to save me. Even though I am the wretch who put Jesus on the cross, though it was my sin that held him there, it was because of that that I now have forgiveness. Give us soft hearts this year to hear your word, to make changes so that we can follow after you and we can produce fruit for you, our landowner, our King, our Savior. In the name of Jesus. Amen.